Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's our Pets and Vets program this afternoon, and to here to take your calls on all your long-leggedy beasties is Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin of Del Mar Animal Hospital in Del Mar, New York, a USDA Category 1 accredited veterinarian. Dr. O'Loughlin is a graduate of Cornell University. She joined the Del Mar Animal Hospital staff in 1998, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also post your comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/voxpop. Or you can comment below our Facebook wall post, facebook.com/wamcradio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at wamcvoxpop, or email even voxpop@wamc.org. Try to give as much information as you can on your pet, including their age and sex, if you're submitting a question online or through social media. Well, Carrie, nice to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great.
It's a beautiful day, but so cold.
Yeah.
I think we're done with the polar vortex now, yes?
I'm certainly looking forward to spring.
Now, it's been a while since you've golfed. I know you're an avid golfer.
Yeah. I was watching golf this weekend, and it was giving me the Jones to get back out.
Soon enough. Another few months, you'll be out there.
Hopefully.
June, July,
yeah.
Something like that. All right, let's go right to the phones, and Amanda in Amherst. Amanda, you're on.
Hi. We have a hamster that we got last June. It's our first family pet. I've noticed just the past few days that it's back claws, or what, back feet, the toenails, look to be a little long. Now, do we clip them ourselves, or we have never brought them to a vet before for anything? She seems to be happy. So,
yeah, certainly any of the pocket pets, as we call them, hamsters, guinea pigs, rabbits, you know, if they're living in a house situation, they're not going to wear their claws down as they normally would in the wild. So you can trim them. Just like with trimming any animal's claws, you do have to be careful not to go too short. They do have a quick where they will bleed if you get them too short. Mm. I don't know what color your hamster's nails are. If you can see a difference in color where it goes from light to dark, I would stay away from the dark part. And worst case scenario, just take the really sharp tips off. And you can just use a regular human nail clipper. If you go too short and they does start to bleed, good home remedies are you can just take a hard bar of soap and rub some soap into it. Some people will use cornstarch, or even a little bit of wax from a candle.
Interesting.
But if you can just, you know, avoid making them bleed, that would be even better.
Is there a special technique for holding the hamster? It's pretty okay with sitting in our hands for a few minutes, but then it seems to want to, you know, gets a little squirmy. So.
Yes. Well, you know how they have a fairly loose bit of skin at the back of their neck?
Uh-huh.
So if you kind of scruff them like a cat, like a mama cat would pick up her kittens...
Uh-huh.
That's usually the best way. Just be careful you don't scruff him so hard that his, you know, that he starts to lose his pink color. You don't want to choke him.
Okay.
Okay, fair enough.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Now, should you sedate your hamster in any way before this procedure?
No.
No. Okay, fair enough. Let's go to Eric in Hudson. Eric, you're on.
Hello. I was wondering whether or not permethrin-treated clothes, particularly insect shield clothing, how harmful that is to cats?
I would believe quite harmful. Cats are extremely sensitive to permethrin. Dogs can handle permethrin.
What is permethrin?
Permethrin is an insecticide.
Okay.
It's used in a lot of flea and tick medications, but only for dogs. That's why a lot of the flea and tick medications will have warnings on them not to be used on cats.
Ah.
Because cats can't metabolize the permethrin, and it will make them have seizures. So, yeah, I would not want my cat to be around anything with permethrin.
Okay, I was just wondering if with the insect shield clothing, which kills ticks on contact.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much would leak out of the clothing, but if you were holding your cat and... any of that got on the cat, and the cat, of course, then grooms itself, you know, it would be a concern.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Eric, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Nina in Livingston. Nina, you're on.
Oh, hi. I have a I don't know how old he is. I think he's very old. According to the x-rays where you can see his lungs are very striated from asthma scars, and I have a problem getting my cat to or cat's asthma to be regulated through both the rescue inhaler and the steroid that he gave him. I think it's fluticasone.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I've given him his steroid dose, and he's had an asthma attack within 20 minutes of the steroid. I didn't want to give him prednisone for a long time because I thought he was very, very old and about to die. He had so many other health issues that have now abated somewhat. But I actually tasted the prednisone once, and I was furious because it was so terrible. It left an aftertaste in my mouth for 3 hours, and I thought this poor cat with no teeth and stomach problems and everything else, I wasn't going to put him through that every day because he had to have it, you know, forcefully taken, dissolved in food. Anyway, so the vets have said that the prednisone is usually what helps stabilize asthma when you're starting out on the inhaler, but I was just wondering if you had any suggestions. Also, the inhaler comes with two masks, a large one and a small one, and if you could instruct me as to which one I should be using. And I only have one inhaler, so I'm switching both the medications for that one inhaler, and I wanted to know how important it is that it be super clean for each every time.
Okay.
Okay. So as far as using prednisone with a cat with asthma, certainly at the very beginning, they often do recommend a short course of oral cortisone.
Right.
To get them, right, you know, sort of under control. And I don't know, were you using tablets?
Yes.
Yeah. Tablets of cortisone, unfortunately, is very bitter.
Yes.
But there are compounding pharmacies that can make it into a tasty flavored liquid.
You're kidding me.
No, not at all. We use them. There's one right in Latham that a lot of people around here use called Fallon's Pharmacy. And then there's online pharmacies, a lot of different places that your vet can call in a compounded product. So there's that possibility of making it into a flavored liquid. And I have a number of cats that are on it and actually like it. They'll lick it right
That's
out of a dish.
Great. You know, I mean, I've brought this problem up several times with the vets that I go to, and
yeah.
I don't know why they haven't suggested it. It's been several years. So anyway, okay.
Okay.
Great.
So that, and then the other thing with the face mask, I guess it just depends on your cat and what is going to be most comfortable for the cat. So there's no one-fits-all large versus small face mask.
Well, my concern was, you know, the large mask will get sort of right up to his eye level. And I didn't
right.
know if, for example, getting the steroid on the fur underneath his eyes could be, an aggravation as it is, like, on the whiskers, which
right.
is why you're supposed to clean them off afterwards.
No, I wouldn't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about
okay.
it. Just whatever is most comfortable for the cat. And I wouldn't worry too much about cleaning them out in between because he's getting both the medications anyway. So if there's a little
mm-hmm.
leftover of the other one, it's not going to hurt.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's really great news. So ask for a compounded liquid form of the prednisone then?
I would try that.
Yeah, that sounds great, actually. So,
okay.
And just keep up with the three doses and the prednisone then?
Yes.
Of the steroid?
Yep.
Okay, great. That's super. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Thanks, Nina. They have face masks for cats?
Yeah, they actually make, for dogs and cats that need inhaled medications.
Yeah.
There's one brand, AeroCat. That's the only one I know of. I'm not sure what the dog one is. AeroDog, I guess it is. And they're made specifically to fit the animals' faces.
I can't believe it would be too popular with the cats.
You can't have them just suck on the inhaler like a person does.
Well, I suppose so. And you said you have several cats who have asthma?
Oh, we treat asthma all the time.
Oh, I thought you meant you personally.
Oh, no, not any of mine. But
okay.
No, no.
Right. Fair enough. Hey, let's take a break, Zach, and I'll try to digest the fact that some cats wear masks. We'll be back.
Ha ha ha. Support for WAMC comes from The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York. Featuring over 100 handcrafted cheeses, grilled cheese sandwiches and soup, Tilldale Farm organic beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cured meats, thecheesetraveler.com. Bard College Programs in Sustainability, offering Master of Science degrees in Environmental Policy and Climate Science and Policy, and an MBA in Sustainability. Open house Saturday, March 8th at Bard College, bard.edu/CEP. Spectrum 8 Theaters, Albany, New York. Showing Hollywood, American independent, and foreign films, and presenting London's National Theatre Series in HD and digital sound. Open daily, spectrum8.com. And Charles Padula, DDS, Union Avenue, Schenectady. Cosmetic dentistry utilizing Invisalign, where teeth can be orthodontically moved without braces. PadulaDDS.com.
Okay, all better now. It's a Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is here, and we are doing our Pets and Vets show for the month. Let's go back to the phones. Benny in Boston Spa. Benny, you're up.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. We have a six-year-old Boston Terrier, and he just licks. Like, you know, when people come in, he'll lick their pants, and then when he's at the table in the summertime, he licks your knees. And how do we get him to not do that?
Has he been doing this for 6 years? Or is this new?
Well, new, but it's probably like a year and a half or 2 years old. I mean, that's not a new habit, but that's about how long I started noticing it.
Okay. Some dogs are lickers. It can be just sort of a bad habit. If he's licking people, I mean, my guess is he's doing it as a way of trying to get attention, potentially attention seeking. However, you may want to potentially get him checked out by your vet, because some dogs will lick things because their stomach is bothering them.
Okay.
So,
but he's not. He doesn't like lick the furniture. He just licks
just like, people.
Yeah. If you're in the summertime, if you're wearing shorts. You know, when you sit at the table, he's going to walk right up to you and he just starts licking your
knees.
You know?
Right. Well, certainly some dogs, especially in the summer, will lick because they love the salt. If we get a little sweaty in the summer, they will definitely do that. And some dog, and I have a dog that if I put hand cream on, oh my goodness. I mean,
really?
She wants that.
Oh, yeah. When my wife comes out of the shower and puts that stuff on, forget
yeah.
it. You know,
yeah.
Is that okay for a dog?
Yeah, it's fine. It's just, you know, I think it's just, for that, it's just the smell and the taste.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's licking, like, people's pant legs and things like that.
Yeah, my daughter's fiancé comes over and he just, you know, sits there and constantly licks his, you know, the knees of his pants while we're sitting at the dinner table.
Hmm.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, so, A, you want to make sure he doesn't have any kind of a stomach issue, but B, just like any other behavior, it's a reprimand. Make him
yep.
stop. When he stops, praise him. And, you know, just sort of break the habit.
Okay. Thanks.
All
right.
Benny. We appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. An open line at the moment. Vox Pop. It's Pets and Vets. Abe and Chatham. Abe, you're on.
Oh, yes. Hello. I have a question about my cat. She's 20 years old, but she's got this big bump on her nose. It's like her nose has been swollen, and it's been like this for months. And so I thought it's a boil. I'll pop it. But it didn't really help that much. It might have gone down a little bit. And then I thought maybe it's a tick bite. But my friend told me that this is very common, though, among a lot of cats. They have this big growth, make their nose look really big.
Abe, did you say she's 20?
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's a good run.
And the lump has been there for months?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I thought maybe it was a tick bite because, you know, sometimes they don't go away that easily.
Yeah, but a tick bite shouldn't be there for months. My concerns in a 20-year-old cat is it could be some sort of a growth. Not to say that it's a cancer or anything, but it could just be almost, you know, a mole type growth or something along those lines. or it could be some sort of chronically inflamed spot. Has she been to the vet?
No, I keep putting it off, but okay. I did pop it, and it, you know, like a little bit of pus or something came out.
Okay.
And the swelling went down a little bit.
Okay.
So it might have helped, but you know, yeah. It's hard to like get it down there and squeeze it all.
Yeah.
I don't want her to suffer.
Yeah, I wouldn't be squeezing anything. Just like you don't want to squeeze a pimple on yourself. You can push the infection deeper in.
Mm.
You know, obviously the best thing would be to have her checked, but if you really wanted to try something at home, you could try a little antibiotic ointment on it. If it did get better when it drained, you know, you can use like Neosporin or one of the over-the-counter.
Yeah, but if it's an infection, that's a long time to have an infection, isn't it?
It is. It is. That's why I think there's some underlying problem there. But, you know, if it's also been there for months, it's obviously not something that's going to cause her demise at this point.
But at 20, something is going to cause her demise fairly soon.
Exactly. True.
He doesn't mind, yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551. And it's Linda's turn. Linda in Rhinebeck, you're on.
Yes, hi. I have a 3.5-year-old Weimaraner female and a 1.25-year-old black lab that I inherited from my daughter. And male. And they go outside. We have an invisible fence, and they go outside together, run around and everything. With all the snow we've had, at one point, maybe 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, I found the male eating frozen feces from the female.
Mm. Oh, boy.
And I thought, oh, great. Then I noticed yesterday he's actually waiting for her to poop, and then he eats it warm. Exactly. And now he's vomiting, and of course you know how that is to clean up.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to do. I'm hoping you have an answer.
Well, thank you for calling.
I know, exactly. I asked the lady, are they going to want to talk about this on the air?
Well,
too late now, eh?
It is unfortunately a fairly common problem.
Oh, okay.
Some dogs, for some reason, just like to eat poop. It's a disgusting habit. It doesn't mean he's deficient in anything.
Certainly not poop.
Yeah. So, you know, my rules for poop-eating dogs is you either need to make it unavailable, which, you know, if they're finding it out in the yard and eating it, that's one thing. So, and of course, this time of year, I know my yard's getting to be a mess because with all the snow, you just can't get out there and clean it up. It's really
hard. Exactly.
Or two, to make it unattractive to the dog. And you can do this one of two ways. If they're eating poop in the yard, you can actually sabotage it. Go out and sprinkle like cayenne or hot sauce or something on it.
Okay.
In the case where the dog is literally waiting for your Weimaraner to poop,
exactly.
You obviously can't do anything about that, but you can try adding, they make some products over that are made for this, called Forbid and other things, but an over-the-counter remedy is Adolph's meat tenderizer.
I'll be darned.
You add that to the Weimaraner's food, and it's supposed to impart a bad taste to the poop. Now, having never tried it myself, I can't tell you that it does, but it'd be something to try.
Well, Adolph's meat tenderizer is great. Works really well on, you know, pot roast.
On meat, yes.
Yeah,
but, you know, I don't know.
I was going to say, this is a product I buy in the grocery store?
Sure.
Yes. Yep. Yep. It's a salt substitute.
Okay.
All right. Well, let the record show. It took 29 minutes for the first poop question. And thank you, Linda, for being that one. I appreciate the call.
Well, and I appreciate the answer. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Bye now. And Joel in Rexford. Joel, you're on.
Yes. My question pales in relation to the former one.
Go ahead anyway.
I have several bird feeders, and I noticed that the blue jays and even the black-capped chickadees are fond of eating the sunflower seeds. My question is, if indeed they're eating these things whole, how do they get the nutrients out of the encapsulated sunflower seed?
So, well, I know for one thing, chickadees do have a habit of taking sunflower seeds from a feeder and taking off of them and actually sort of caching them.
Saving them for
Yeah, so they day? Yeah, they take them and they hide them in, you know, spots in the trees and things like that. So
are they like chipmunks sticking them in their cheeks? It looks to me like they're actually swallowing them. Certainly the blue jays are swallowing.
Right, right. Well, and that, and, you know, birds have, well, I have to say I'm not a bird person. So,
okay.
But I know at least some birds, and I'm assuming most seed-eating birds, have a crop. And the crop is an organ that's made to sort of grind and chew up food. So I'm assuming they've got to be getting their nutrition out of it, or that they wouldn't be swallowing and eating it
Absolutely.
That way.
Are they ruminators?
No, they're not ruminators, not like a cow. But the crop is just a, it's got a thick lining, and it's supposed to help sort of mash up food that they eat before it goes
into
their stomach.
So it would grind the shell along with the seed to make it a nutrient for
Correct.
Them.
Correct.
Oh, I see. Hmm. Okie doke.
Well, that's interesting. That's
blue
that's
jays
a great
certainly can store a lot of them in their crops.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Joe,
you're welcome.
Thanks a lot. What an interesting selection of calls we've had today. Hey, Doctor. Let's go to Kathy and try to keep the streak going. Kathy, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call, Doctor.
Sure.
I have a border collie mix. She's 11 years old, and about 3 weeks ago, she ripped her ACL.
Oh, dear.
Right straight through. The vet said he was pretty sure that it was totally torn, and she's a very healthy, active 11-year-old dog.
Right.
And so I had two choices for the surgery. One was to put the plates in and cut the bone.
Correct.
I'm not sure what that is called, but and the less invasive one with the sutures. So I chose the less invasive one because of her age.
Okay.
And then I'm reading that the success rate for that is like 19%, and I want to know how I can improve the odds for my dog to be able to run again, because she was a very active dog until now.
Right. Right. So yes, there are several different ways that an ACL, for those who don't know, is a torn ligament in the knee, and so it can be repaired several different ways. And the TPLO, which is shorthand for the one you were describing, where they actually cut the bone and put plates in and change the way the knee, you know, goes together. That has a very good success rate, not perfect, but good. Where they do sutures on the outside of the knee, there are several different ways that can be done. I don't know. I think 19 is a little low. I've seen a lot of dogs do just fine with that technique. The important thing is to keep the dog quiet while they're healing. That's
okay.
Your best thing to help your dog to do well.
How would one do that with an active dog?
Keep taking them out on a leash at all times, probably you're talking the first 4 to 6 weeks, just out for bathroom duty back in the house.
Mm.
No walks, no playing. Sometimes you actually have to keep them crated in the house if they're really exuberant about running around in the house. It's tough on everyone, but if you want to have success, that's the best way to do it. And
okay,
then
I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and a lot of people also recommend physical therapy. You know, there are a lot of veterinarians around that offer physical therapy, or even something as simple as what they call passive range of motion exercises, where you just, you know, bend and extend,
okay.
Bend and extend the leg.
Okay, that's one of the things he'd recommended, but she won't let me do it.
Right.
I don't have anybody to hold the other end so that we can do it. But, you know, she is bearing weight on it.
Yeah, good.
The other problem, she's pretty calm in the house, and she just lays around, which just surprises me. But she's pretty drugged up, too, I think. She has
yep.
a lot of medications. The other problem I have is I have to walk her because she's so fussy about where she
goes to the bathroom.
The
yep.
Yes.
Yep. But you just want to keep it to a minimum.
I do. As soon as she goes, I bring her right back in again.
Yep, yep.
But so I guess I'm doing everything I can do
you,
right now. But
you are.
Physical therapy is an option, I think. You know, I just want her to be able to run again because, as I said, even though she's 11 years old, she's a very healthy dog, and we always walked 4 or 5 times a week for 5 miles.
Yep.
I mean, so she's in good shape.
Well, I had a dog once who was 9 who tore both of her cruciates back-to-back, and unfortunately for her, the first one didn't heal well, but the second one was perfect. So, you know.
Okay.
So it just is just a matter of trying to follow the rules and be real cautious about it. And
exactly.
Keep your fingers crossed.
Yes.
You bet.
Kathy, good luck. Thanks for the call.
Okay, thank you.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest, and it's Pets and Vets, as you may have surmised. Tony in Altamont. Tony, you're on. Hello, Tony.
Yes.
You're on.
Boy, I can hardly hear you.
Hello.
Yeah, everything's going fine. Hey, I have a 2.5-year-old female Bengal, and it's a brother-sister combination. But anyway, the female has been spraying and peeing all over, on the counter, on the floor, everything she can. I've had her to the vet for tests. I have 5 litter boxes. I've used pheromones. I've used Feel Away. I've used Catatract. I've used special litter. And I can't get her. I just don't know what's wrong.
So I'm assuming, Tony, they checked her urine for infection?
Yes.
Okay. And she didn't have?
Suppose that they have. I had her twice there for that, plus for stones.
Okay.
And I just don't know. You know, it's a brother-sister combination I have.
Yeah.
And she'll go right into it right in front of me. It gets disgusting on a counter.
Oh, boy.
It's like she's marking her territory, but gee whiz.
Yeah.
Right next to a litter. Won't even go in a litter box. I got 5 litter boxes.
So if you close her in a room with a litter box, will she use the litter box?
You know, I've never tried that, you know, because they're active cats and like to go around. And I would have to lock the male and the female together, but I assume she would use it. I mean, she does use the litter box, but she just goes and I can't pin it down. I can't pin it to anything.
Yep.
I'm going to take her back to the vet again to have her checked again, but, you know, how many times can I take her to a vet and have her checked?
Right. I mean, what you need to, A, of course, rule out a medical issue, which it does sound like you have gone that route. You need to rule out if there's something about the litter box that she doesn't like. Do you have this? You said you have 5 litter boxes.
Yeah, 5. I have a huge litter box. I have a medium size. I mean, I got a litter box. It's like a sandbox.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you have the same litter in every box?
I have 2 different kinds of litter.
Okay.
You know, in case, you know, they don't like one litter to use another, but I've tried different kinds, and I even sprinkle the Catatract, and I've used all sorts of stuff. I just can't figure it out.
Yeah. So, I mean, one thing I will often recommend is to close the cat in a room with several litter boxes with a different litter in each one and see if she, chooses one over the other to find out, A, if there's a particular litter she really likes. And if you find one she really likes, use that. If she's still, and of course, I'm assuming you're cleaning these areas where she's peeing with a special cleaner for cat urine.
Yeah, I use Resolve, Anet Miracle, whatever it is. I've even used vinegar and water.
Yeah.
I'll do everything I can.
I will tell you, there's one product, you can't buy it in the store around here, but you can get it online pretty easily, called Fizzion. It's Fizzion.
Mm.
It's a tablet that you drop in water in it, and then you can spray it. That works really well at breaking down the cat smell. But lastly, if all else fails, medications. We use a lot of Prozac in cats, basically, for cat spraying. I honestly have one of my cats on it right now. Now you can get it in a flavor tablet, which the cats will.
But how will that control where she's peeing, though?
Because they're often, when they're doing this, if they're doing it for a behavioral reason, they're doing it because they're anxious. They're anxious about something. Now, obviously, we don't speak cat, so we don't know what they're anxious about. But it often will do the trick.
All right, Tony, we got to take a break here, and thank you for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Pets and Vets, home stretch next.
Support for WAMC comes from Sylvan Learning Centers, providing personalized tutoring in math, reading, writing, study skills, SAT and ACT prep, and more. 1-800-EDUCATE. Lexington Vacuum, Albany, New York, featuring Miele, Simplicity, Dyson, Electrolux, Vapori Vapor Cleaning, Sales Service Repairs, LEXIVAC.com. Mass Mocha, presenting Water Songs, live music and film about the Colorado River, March 1st, and Bodyhead, Kim Gordon and Bill Nace, in concert on March 15th, massmocha.org. And Hunt, Peach & Castenson Dental, providing general and implant dentistry to Pioneer Valley families for 30 years in the heart of Amherst on Amity Street. HuntandPeachDental.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Back to the phones we go, and it's Eileen in Kingston. Hi, Eileen.
Hello.
Hi, Eileen. What's up?
Hi. My dog was recently diagnosed with a mast cell tumor. They did it by needle biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
She's a golden retriever mix, about 13 years old, and in the past she's gotten a lot of sebaceous cysts. So when she developed this ball-sized thing, like on her sternum, and it's very soft, it seemed like it was fluid-filled, but they did needle biopsy, found out mast cell tumor. So can you tell me about mast cell tumors?
You bet. Mast cell tumors, and it's M-A-S-T, like a mast of a ship.
Mm-hmm.
Mast cells are cells that are found in tissues. They contain granules that have histamine. So when you have an allergic reaction, histamine is what causes that. And mast cell tumors, I have found, can look like anything. I've had them look like a hard nodule. I've had them look like a little fatty lump. I've had them look like a sebaceous cyst. I've had them, you know, they can, I found they're very tricky that way. But they're usually pretty easy to diagnose. You stick a needle in them, you get mast cells out on the slide. Mm. So they're usually pretty easy to diagnose. The good news is the vast majority of mast cell tumors that are found in the skin are generally what we call benign, where you remove them, they're gone. But you don't know that until you remove them and have them biopsied and find out they stage them as whether they're low grade or high grade. High grade mast cell tumors can be very bad news. So the best thing to do is to get it removed, find out what grade it is, and go from there. If it's a low grade one, you're pretty much done. You take it off, you're done. But dogs that do get mast cell tumors, even the low grade ones, are more prone to getting them repeatedly. So once a dog has had a mast cell tumor, we do recommend the owners have any new lumps checked right away. Does that help?
That does help. So the only way they can do a better biopsy to stage it is by removing it.
Yes. The problem with mast cell tumors, because they have those histamine granules, you don't really want to be just taking a piece of it, because it's kind of like poking a beehive. You're going to make that really irritated if you just cut into it. So usually what we do is what's called an excisional biopsy. So you basically remove it and send it in for testing.
And because they contain histamine, does it have anything related to allergies?
Not usually. It doesn't have to be that the dog has allergies. They can show up on any dog.
Okay, and what they recommended is to have an ultrasound and an X-ray to see how deep it goes. So, because it's on near her sternum.
Right, it may be in a bad spot. You know, that I would go with what your vet has recommended.
Sure.
Being I haven't seen it. So,
okay.
Of course. Well, thank you very much for your explanation.
You're welcome,
Eileen. Thank you very much. So, if a dog has a mast cell tumor, it's benign. You remove it, it's benign. And you say that it's more likely they'll come back. Does the fact that it's benign once mean that they'll always be benign?
No.
So there could be a malignant one at some point.
Which is why we always want to check them. I've had a number of dogs, you take a mast cell tumor off and they never get another one.
Yeah.
And I have one dog that I recently just took the fourth one off in 7 years, I think. Hmm. So about every 2 or 3 years, we're taking another one off this dog. So.
All right, here's one from our website, WAMC.org. Hi, Ray and Carrie. I have a 3-year-old female blue tick coonhound that is aggressive at dinner time with my other two nice older dogs. She shows her teeth and growls and makes dinner time a tense time for everyone. This sounds just like my daughters. What can I do to make dinner time peaceful?
Well, it sounds like your dog is exhibiting what's called displaced aggression.
Okay.
So something about dinner time, it probably is food related, is making this dog, because the dog can't get to your food and it gets it worked up, it then turns around and starts being mean to its other dogs. Mm. So I would just try and not have your dog be around the table at dinner time if that's possible. Other options are to just get the dogs to each sit in a separate spot in the room, give them some entertainment, give them a treat or a chewy bone or something, and have them just learn that when people are eating at the table, they need to sit and be quiet and lay down.
Okay. All right, let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Katie in Addison, Vermont. Hi, Katie, you're on.
Hi.
Hi there.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I have a 1.5-year-old female Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and she's been doing this really funky thing. It's almost like stutter stepping. It only happens with her right back leg, and it's definitely an involuntary spasm thing. It lasts from a couple seconds to maybe up to a minute on and off, but it's unpredictable. And I don't know, this is my first dog ever, so I don't know, you know, how concerned I should really be about this, and then what's the best way to approach it. Should I try to get her on video to show a vet, because it's really unpredictable when it happens. Could you tell me maybe what it could be, or, yeah, anything.
Sure. Does this, when this spasm happens, is she walking or running, or is it just sitting
usually,
there?
She does it a lot, like when we go on walks, but sometimes it'll happen occasionally, like when we're playing around. But mostly it's when she's on a leash and we're walking.
Okay. And when the leg sort of spasms, does it just sort of, she sticks it out straight and kind of shakes it around, or what is it doing?
It's like she tucks it up into her body, and it's almost like she's skipping a little bit.
Okay.
With it. It's very strange.
The most likely scenario for this is that she's having a problem with her kneecap. Small breed dogs are very prone to having what's called luxating patella, where the kneecap pops out of the groove that it normally rides in. And your vet should be able to diagnose that very easily just by feeling her leg. So I would get that checked.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're
Katie,
welcome.
Thanks for listening. 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin is our guest. Let's go to Andrew in Hopewell Junction. Hi, Andrew. You're on.
Hi. I had a question about my corn snake, a female, approximately 3 years old.
Okay.
She was having trouble with her mice. When she went to the bathroom, the mouse would come out almost whole.
Oh.
Ouch.
I got to tell you, Andrew, I really don't know anything about snakes. I'm trying to think what I could even recommend. So the mouse would come out looking like it went in, basically?
Yeah.
How do you know it was the same mouse?
Well,
say that again?
No, I'm just kidding. Go. Don't mind me, Andrew. Continue.
Does the snake seem to be losing weight?
Tell you the truth, she already died.
Oh.
Well, it's a moot point.
Yeah. I will tell you, you know, the fact that, did she die shortly after this started?
About approximately 2 weeks after.
Okay. Yeah, my guess is there was something going on with that snake that made it not able to get the nutrients out of its food. Whether that caused it to die is hard to say, but...
Well, sorry, Andrew.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But in the future, what I would do is call around and find a vet near you that deals with exotics and see if they could help you.
Thanks, Andrew, for the call. Are there vets out there who will deal with exotics?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not one of them.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to Dawn in Albany. Dawn, you're on.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have a 3.5-year-old German Shepherd female who last July started looking like she was sort of having like a conjunctivitis, and we tried all kinds of treatments, and nothing really seemed to touch it. And then it seemed to come and go, and then this past fall, actually it was maybe January, and this is after like 4 different diagnoses from different vets, I took her to an ophthalmologist specialist who diagnosed her with plasmoma and said that she does not have pannus now, but that there's a good likelihood that she will develop pannus, and at this point did not want to treat her because he wanted to save any future application of cortisone should she develop pannus.
Right.
And I do notice that there are some times when the haws are extremely red and extruded, and other times when they seem calmer, but they're always up. Activity seems to inflame them. If she's settled in front of the wood stove, it inflames them. She doesn't seem to be in pain, but I have read that this is sometimes called pannus of the haws. So I just, wondered if you had any information about that, or if there's anything that I should be doing to be more proactive. He said you can give him murine, but all that's going to do is make you feel better. So I don't know.
So she's not currently on any eye medications?
None at all. Not now. No.
Okay. I know a lot of times with mild eye issues, and certainly in the winter, and if it's, when she's near the wood stove and all that, the air is very dry this time of year. And certainly getting some moisture in those eyes is never going to hurt.
Okay.
So you can use artificial tears. They also make lubricants. There's different brand names, but you could ask your regular vet for a good lubricant that will stay in the eye a little bit longer than just an artificial tear.
Yep.
And that at least should help with the short-term irritation and see if that doesn't make the redness better.
Okay.
All right.
And have you ever heard this as called, pannus of the haws, or just it's right now it's just diagnosed as plasmoma?
So it's the third eyelid that's irritated?
It's the third eyelid that's irritated and red. There's no evidence of pannus on the cornea at all.
Okay. Yeah, no, not that I know of. I mean, we certainly do see some young dogs who get irritated third eyelids, and it can be allergy related. It can be just, like I said, dry eye type related.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope she doesn't get pannus because
I hope so too. Luckily, most pannus can be controlled with cortisone. So. You've at least got that if it does happen.
Okay.
Yeah. All right, Doctor. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dawn, thank you very much for the call. Let's go on over to Carrie in Kingston. Carrie, you're on.
Hi. How are you? My questions have to do with a couple of the other calls that came in. One of them was regarding the healing from the surgery, and I wondered what nutritional and supplements role might play in increasing healing factors, if you have information on that. And also with animals that have tumors, I know that some cancers have been connected to certain viruses. I wonder if you're finding any connections to tumor growth with chronic bacterial infections like Bartonella or Lyme, that can play a part in that, and what role diet also might play in being anti-cancer.
Okay, good questions.
Well, certainly, I mean, any post-surgical dog or dog with cancer, nutrition is always critical. You want to make sure they're on a good quality dog food. Certainly, any dog that has had an orthopedic issue, in my mind, it never hurts to use a glucosamine chondroitin supplement. They do make some pet foods that have that in it, or you can just get a supplement separately and give it. Glucosamine and chondroitin in joints is it basically helps with thickening of joint fluid and helping them to repair cartilage. So it never hurts in my mind. As far as with cancer, they were really pushing for a while putting cancer dogs on a high protein, low carb diet because they felt that carbohydrates sort of fed the cancer. But unfortunately, most of the super high protein, low carb diets were not very easily digested by the dogs. So you had the dogs not wanting to eat the foods, having stomach issues, diarrhea. So, you know, what I always tell people is, you know, if their dog has any kind of cancer, to just make sure it's getting a good quality diet. Don't push the carbs. Don't be adding rice or, you know, things like that to the food. But other than that, just keeping to a good quality food.
Okay.
Would that be like the foods that don't include wheat and corn and soy and things? Those aren't natural for dogs, right? Or
no, dogs are omnivores. So, you know, unless they have any food allergies, I wouldn't be worried about the wheat and things like that.
All right. Carrie, thank you very much for the call. We go to Christy in Hudson. Christy, you're on.
Hi. I have a Labradoodle who we think he's quite smart. He was a rescue. And when we adopted him, we were told he was not good with young children, which is fine, we're retired, but when he sees an animal or a child on television, the dog goes berserk. He barks and he jumps up on the TV screen, and I think he was pretty much traumatized when he was young.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he's much better with us now. He's much more comfortable. We have a spray bottle of water with a touch of vinegar in it that we, you know, as he lunges for the TV, we try to get it right in her hands and spray him. And, you know, there is some improvement, but, you know.
That's the darndest thing.
Well, I guess what I would do, you know, rather than using a negative reinforcement with the vinegar and water, I would try and make him it into a more positive experience. So, you know, one, you want to work on teaching him to sit next to you and be calm.
Okay.
And as soon as something comes on the TV, and you may need to, it may mean sitting with him with a leash on at first,
okay,
so that you can immediately give him a little correction and then give him a treat. Say, sit, stay, good boy, and give him a treat and make it really positive. And eventually, hopefully, be to the point where you're like, look, a baby on the TV. Here, have a treat. Good boy. So that he actually learns that it's a good thing and not a bad thing.
That's great. That's worked with a lot of other things that we're doing with him. So, you know, to reward the positive. So that, I didn't think of that. Thank you very much. We will try that.
Okay.
Thank you. That's fascinating. I always thought, cognition-wise, dogs and cats would look at a TV, and I was always told that they would just see colored lights and images, but they can actually see forms?
It may be the sound. It may be the sound more than the form.
Well, I'll tell you, Doctor, this was an interesting program. We had some interesting calls today. Thanks to everybody who called in, and sorry if you didn't make it through. Support comes from St. Joseph's School, Uptown Kingston, an Academy of Arts and Sciences offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014. Daily tours of their historic Uptown campus. Joyful learning guided by faith. StJosephSchoolKingston.com. Adirondack Sports and Fitness Summer Expo, a Capital Region run, hike, bike, paddle, triathlon, and healthy living show with 125 exhibitors and more. March 8th and 9th at Saratoga City Center, adksports.com. And Amtrak announcing the Amtrak Weekend Getaway Package for round-trip travel Thursdays through Mondays between New York City and Montreal, now through April 24th. Advanced reservations required. Amtrak.com. Thanks again to Dr. Carrie O'Loughlin for joining us today. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer at the controls. Colleen O'Connell answered your calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein-Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, stay tuned. Rob Edelman will be here, and Audrey Kupferberg. We talk Oscars.